You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You've heard the stories. They are rare, but they seem to be increasing in frequency, especially as our population ages. A man is caring for his wife. Perhaps she has a terminal illness or dementia. And then you read about it in the paper. These lovers, this husband and wife, finally couldn't take it anymore. He kills her and then himself. And sometimes the response of the media almost sounds like an extended awe. Isn't that sweet? Well, it isn't sweet. It's terribly tragic. But why does the media glamorize these murder-suicides, especially among the elderly? Joining us to talk about them and to give her reaction, Colleen Carol Campbell. She's host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book The New Faithful. And Colleen also writes a biweekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd.
This is really a series of very rare but sad stories. They're often portrayed in the press as these murder-suicides among the elderly as mercy killings. What's usually and really driving these terrible events?
Well, basically we're talking about male caregivers often killing their elderly and typically demented wives and then themselves. I posed that question to Dr. Donna Cohen, who's down at the University of South Florida and studies these cases nationwide, and she said, again, it's almost always men doing this, as opposed to female caregivers don't tend to act out in this particular way, and that even though they're labeled mercy killings, the women involved almost never consent to this and typically are unaware. And one reason you can see that is in some of these cases, the women have defensive wounds, especially when a gun is used, as it typically is in these cases, not always, but sometimes. So these are portrayed in the press as sort of this Romeo and Juliet story for the elder set, this, you know, the husband and wife sailing off together into the sunset. But in reality, it's usually an exhausted, depressed, and desperate male caregiver who's at the end of his rope, typically socially isolated, because male caregivers often are, when they're elderly, they tend to be less connected sometimes than female caregivers. And they basically snap and kill themselves and the person they're caring for. You know, in their minds, they may rationalize this as compassion, but again, it's not typically something the woman asked for or even had the ability to give consent to, because so often the victims are demented.
You say it's a dangerous double standard. What's the nature of that double standard?
Well, basically, behavior that if this were a young, healthy couple, we would basically say that this was obviously criminal behavior on the part of the husband, that we would say this was the ultimate form of abuse and very selfish and cruel. But in cases like the one recently that made headlines in Pennsylvania, and that was that of a prominent Pennsylvanian, Charles Snelling, and his wife, Adrienne, who had had dementia for 6 years, and he was her caregiver, and he took her life and his own. He shot himself. It's unclear how he took his wife's life. Police have not released that information, but you know, this was kind of heralded as this great love story. But again, had she been healthy, had she not had dementia, certainly had she been younger, we would have called this spousal abuse and said this is a horrific crime. So there is a difference there, and I think it goes back to the way that we view both our elders in this culture, but also especially those elders who are demented. And this idea that somehow when you become demented, you lose your humanity, your right to life, and you not only don't have a right to life, you probably don't even want to be alive. And we don't, of course, ask the people this. We figure they wouldn't be able to answer that, which, you know, of course, in their state they often can't. So we just make the assumption their quality of life is so low that even murder is a better alternative for them than living with dementia.
You mentioned just a moment ago how we view the elderly in general. What does this, and especially how society and the media portray these tragic events, what does it say about how we view the elderly, even apart from the issue of dementia?
Well, I think we have a pretty low regard for elders in our country, and I think it's unfortunate. You know, as long as you are defying the odds, you know, you're running marathons at 80, you're still out on the swinging single circuit at 75, you've got some liposuction and some Botox and you look like you're 40, then we celebrate you and we say that's great, you know, aging isn't all bad. But if you sort of look and act like someone who's been on this earth for 80 plus years, especially if you are frail, even if it's not with dementia, and you're not, acting half your age, you're acting like someone who is older, we tend to say that's a bit of a tragedy. I mean, we increasingly see aging not as a normal part of life, but as something we have to stave off at all costs. Now, my husband is a geriatrician. It's obviously true. We want to keep our elders as active and healthy as possible, as long as possible. But, you know, there comes a time when all of us are going to face some of the limitations that come with age, and we're a youth-obsessed society that really doesn't know how to deal, first of all, with death, and secondly, with aging in a graceful way. So as I said, we celebrate those people who are kind of the exceptions to the rule of aging in terms of the way they support themselves or their physical or mental abilities. But, you know, even those elders who want to age gracefully in a dignified way, but they can't run their marathons and they're not acting like they're 25, we tend to cast them aside, and we also tend to segregate them. And this happens everywhere, including in our churches, where we just don't see elders as part of the regular population. And this leads to some of the isolation that I think contributes to problems like this uptick in elder murder suicides, where isolated caregivers snap. They don't have community support, and no one around them is telling them that what they do day in and day out matters, even though, of course, it does.
When it comes to dementia, Colleen, even the most well-meaning, even Christians, will often fall prey to the notion, well, my husband or my wife or my grandmother, they are suffering the latter stages of dementia. It's not them anymore. They're not the same person, and that's a very short step away from they're not a person, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And my father suffered from Alzheimer's for almost 15 years, so I certainly, I know the temptation there, and I know the pain that people go through watching a loved one change in these ways. It's absolutely painful, and I don't want to minimize that. But that person remains the person you've always known and loved. Even if they can't recognize you, our job is to recognize them, to recognize their human dignity right up to the last moments of their lives. And if you ask those who are looking for this, especially through the lens of a Christian worldview, they will tell you they have seen great grace working in the lives of these people who are very limited, but still can be great conduits of grace in all of our lives, not the least of which is calling forth from us compassion and challenging us to see the beauty and the dignity that is in them and in their souls, even if to the outside world they don't look like anything like they used to be. This is still the same person God created, and it's still the same person we knew and loved for decades, and we should treat them that way.
Why do you think it is, with about a minute or so here, why do you think it is that at the beginning of life it's not so hard to make that leap? Infants don't have a real memory capacity. They don't recognize faces or people, as far as we can tell. Other than the fact that they're little and cute, they don't differ in a lot of ways in terms of capacity from those who are in the latter stages of dementia. Why do we extend the compassion and protection, at least to a certain degree, of the very young, but not so much for the very old?
Well, that is a question I've pondered because, especially having a newborn in the house right now, I see a lot of the same standards applied to dismiss the humanity of frail elders could also be applied to my newborn daughter. I think the cuteness factor actually does play into it, but I also think there's a fear there. There's a terror on our part of what we will someday become. And there's a sense if we stay away from the elderly, if we turn away from demented people and from elders, perhaps we can sort of avoid that fate ourselves. It's almost as if people think aging, and specifically dementia, are contagious conditions. But of course, that's not the case at all. And someday we're all going to be in this place, and we may not be so cute to anyone either. And that's why it's so important that we base our understanding of the human person and of personhood itself, not on qualities like autonomy or rationality or the ability to have an interesting conversation, but squarely on the fact that the human person is created in the image of God and remains a human person from the very moment of conception right to the moment of natural death.
So with about 30 seconds, you're really talking about, regardless of whether it's the young, the old, the able-minded, or the demented, it's about intrinsic value that attaches to a person throughout their natural life. About 30 seconds.
That's exactly right, and I think this is why we see that the same people who attack the humanity of demented elders, people like Peter Singer, are the ones who are also pushing for the legalization of things like infanticide, because they use this same judgment stick all across the lifespan, and whether you're disabled, you're a child in the womb, you're a newborn who someone finds inconvenient, or you are a demented elder and they don't consider you productive and useful, they would consider your right to life as nil. And so we need to fight against this at every stage, because it impacts every stage. And our thinking on one stage of life, on the humanity of the weak at one stage of life, will eventually be reflected in the way we treat those at the other end of the spectrum. So that's why we need to be consistent and have a consistent ethic of life.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a biweekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You could read her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Colleen, thanks again.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, when we come back in the last half hour of Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, April the 12th, a little audio open lines. He's up to it again. Ed Young is probably most famous for his series of sex experiments sermon series that he's done over a couple of years. He's got a book about the sex experiment. It's supposed to be about marriage. Well, on Easter Sunday morning at his megachurch down in Dallas, Texas, he's always trying to top himself, isn't he? He had a live lion, male lion, in a cage, and a live lamb, not in the same cage, and apparently it had something to do with the sermon series he's starting on animals. We'll talk about that stunt, what you think of it, during Audio Open Lines right after this.
South Africa,
China,
Germany,
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world?
India, Sweden,
Egypt, France,
Turkey, Japan,
Australia, Canada,
United Kingdom,
Hong Kong,
Austria,
Finland, Malaysia,
Singapore, Bulgaria,
Korea, Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines,
Mexico,
Spain,
New Zealand,
Kuwait.
Is Christianity merely one limited half-true perspective on God? Find out in an article I've written for the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's titled, The Blind Men and the Elephant, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Christian Teve's journey from the agnosticism of a committed Darwinist to faith in Jesus Christ. The online Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Wrongful birth lawsuits are just plain wrong.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Pro-life blogger Rebecca Taylor wrote recently about wrongful birth lawsuits. These lawsuits are brought when the parents of a disabled child sue a physician for negligence. They claim the doctor failed to inform parents of the child's disability. Parents must also state that had they known, they would have aborted the baby. Sadly, this assumes that a disabled child is better off never being born. It puts pressure on doctors to single out disabled children and even recommend abortion. Otherwise, the doctor could be sued for doing his job, bringing a live child into the world.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
If your travels bring you to Northwest Indiana, the Saints of Heritage Lutheran Church in Valparaiso invite you to join us for a Christ-centered, cross-focused divine service at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. For more information about visiting Heritage, please contact Pastor Joseph Ostafinski by calling 219-464-2810 or sending an email to heritagelc@frontier.com. You can also visit us on the web at www.heritage-lcms.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.